Hello and welcome to the Global Energy Transition Podcast, presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. I am your host, Michael Buxbaum, lead blogger, photojournalist, and advisor to the energytransition.org. Though I am based in Germany, our podcast series reviews how the energy transition is developing globally while we discuss proposed solutions to the growing climate emergency. Like the blogs we publish, all our materials fall under a Creative Commons license and are therefore free for anyone to use, so long as you credit the material. As the climate crisis envelops us, we intend for this podcast series to inform listeners about progressive steps forward and new tools being developed to deal with what's ahead. Though we may not all be in the same boats, we all face the same gathering storm. As we talked about in the last podcast, the world has a growing methane problem. Emissions of this highly potent greenhouse gas, some 86 times more heat trapping than carbon dioxide, are skyrocketing. While there are many sources for these emissions, one of the largest is the global oil and gas industry. And with regulations and an enforcement mechanism in place, we could reduce so-called fugitive methane emissions leaking out of oil and gas infrastructure, pipelines, and wells. But first, we have to know if and where those leaks are occurring. And let's face it, we can't trust the oil and gas industry to tell us. To help make us aware of the scale of the methane leakage problem, last year our main guest on this podcast, James Torrito, a campaigner with the Clean Air Task Force, traveled throughout much of Europe hunting for methane escaping from oil and gas industry sites. Using a specially designed camera, one also used by industry, James's videos show methane leakage occurring, well, everywhere. Last December, just days before the European Union released its draft methane regulations, I caught up with James and he shared a bit of what he and his camera had revealed. Stay tuned. James, you've spent the better part of 2021 crisscrossing Europe looking for and filming fugitive methane leakage, documenting what you have found with an infrared camera. How many countries and how many sites have you visited then to date?
Yeah, so I started in February and have now gone all the way to just last month. I've been to 12 countries over the last, 7 months, and more than 300 different oil and gas sites across those 12 countries.
Before we dive into the problems you've encountered, are there any countries or any gas fields across Europe or anywhere that you traveled so far that weren't full of leaks?
The thing that we've been seeing and what I've been observing in the field is that there are emissions in pretty much every country I look. Countries have different infrastructure. Some countries have a lot of production equipment. Some countries have a lot of storage and transmission equipment, and some countries really just have very little of both. So the more infrastructure there is in the country, the more likely I'm going to go out and find something. There's a little bit of variation, but it's not as significant. And the variation, I think, has a lot more to do with the type of infrastructure that's in the country than actually, one country doing better than the other, let's say.
Is there a model nation, a leader in controlling methane, or is it just billowing out from wells and facilities across the continent?
I mean, I think that's tough to say. Like I said, I mean, there are problems pretty much everywhere. In every country I've been to, I've definitely seen issues. And now the issues might be a little bit different. You know, we don't see gas coming out of every single well that I look at, but some countries that has been the case. In other countries, there's a lot less wells. And then the countries have different facilities, too. So you're seeing in, say, Germany, a lot more of gas transmission. So gas that's being transported across the country. And then in Netherlands, for instance, you have some production areas. But those areas, in Groningen in the north, and those areas have started to slow down because they're actually going to close the wells there next year. So there's not a lot of production going on there anymore, and a lot of the equipment's not in use.
Let's walk through your process. When you visit a fossil gas production center where the gas is being mined, which obviously not every nation has that, can you walk us through your setup and what you're finding and detecting and filming?
Yeah, sure. So I do a lot of research at my desk first to understand the infrastructure in the country. And then I work with our partners in the various countries we're planning to go. And, you know, I map all of those sites out. I do some kind of desk work looking at Google Satellite, looking at different sites I want to go to see what kind of equipment they have. And then when I arrive at the facility, I kind of get a layout of what it looks like, what kind of equipment, what's going on. So, you know, it could be, is it primarily an oil facility? Is it primarily a gas facility? Is this a production facility? Is this, you know, just a transmission or storage facility? And so I try to get a sense of that. And then I get a sense of the particular type of equipment that I should expect to see based on that information. And then, you know, then I look for certain things because certain types of equipment are more prone to failure, or certain equipment often just emits gas in terms of the way it operates, particularly older pieces of equipment. There have been upgrades in the industry to create equipment and to build equipment that don't emit so much gas when they're functioning. So I kind of get to do a scan of the whole site to see what kind of equipment is on the site and where I think I should expect to see emissions.
And the camera you're using, can you tell our audience about the camera itself?
Sure. It is an infrared camera. So it is a thermal camera, and it has been designed to visualize methane emissions, methane gas, as well as other volatile organic compounds. Now, these gases absorb infrared radiation at a certain wavelength. And so the company has designed this camera to filter for only that wavelength. So when you're looking through the camera, you're seeing infrared radiation at a certain wavelength at which methane and other gases absorb it. So you would see heat in the background, and then when you have a gas in between it, the gas is actually absorbing the heat and then brings it into the camera. And it appears, when you look at the videos that I've collected and published online, that you're seeing smoke. But what you're seeing is really the absence of heat that's making it into the camera because of the blocking of the gas.
This camera that you're using, or the cameras that you use, these are also cameras that the oil and gas industry also has access to and uses in the field, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So the cameras were originally, I think, launched in the mid-2000s for the oil and gas industry. And the oil and gas industry speaks pretty highly of these cameras as well. They've been using them for almost 20 years. And in 2016, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency actually recommended this camera as the best available technology for oil and gas companies to use to find emissions. So activist groups, environmentalists, have used this camera more so in the United States. A lot of this work's been going on by one of our partners, Earthworks, who's done some amazing work in the Permian Basin in Texas. And the cameras themselves are kind of expensive. So it is a little bit harder for environmental groups to actually buy these cameras. But for an oil and gas company, the financial issue is not very large. And what we know from methane emissions, I mean, methane is the product of these oil and gas companies. So using one of these cameras actually saves oil and gas companies money over time. So it's a really effective tool, and it has been used for a long time.
Sorry to break in here, but shortly after James and I spoke, I was able to interview the partner he references at Earthworks, Texas Sharon, who we will hear from later in this show and in the next episode. But as we return to this interview, James begins describing what he's been filming and where he's finding methane leaks.
We've been looking at upstream sites as well as midstream sites. Not so much in the downstream sector.
Downstream is for customers, like individual consumers.
Yeah. So when you're thinking of downstream, you think of city grid distribution. So pipelines, there are pipelines across city streets. And you wouldn't use this camera to look for emissions there. You'd use some other tools. So I've been focused on the upstream sectors and the midstream sectors. And the upstream is the production and processing facilities. So, you know, your oil wells, your gas wells, and then the sites that separate the oil and the gas, and then they separate the different types of gases. And then I've also been looking at the midstream sector, which is the transmission. So the long pipelines and storage facilities where gas gets stored underground for long term so that countries and cities can have a stable supply of gas when they need to tap into it, like the winter months. And yes, I've been finding emissions throughout the whole upstream and downstream, upstream and midstream sectors. So where gas is being mined, where it's being collected and processed, and then when it's being transported, and I'm finding emissions at every one of these sites. There's no particular location I've been to where I haven't, or any particular type of site I haven't found emissions at.
Let's drill a bit deeper then, all pun intended, into four different European nations that you visited just this summer: the United Kingdom, Germany, the Netherlands, and Romania. The UK produces a lot of gas, onshore, offshore, mostly offshore, but certainly onshore too, and it burns even more fossil gas. Germany is the single largest importer and consumer in the world, and Germany only produces a little bit of what it burns. Most of it's imported. The Netherlands remains the EU's largest single producer, though volumes, as you said, are rapidly falling, and Romania is currently the second largest producer in the EU, but is projected to become a much bigger producer going forward. You visited all four countries. Let's talk about your experiences, starting with the UK. Where were you there, and what did you find? And did you also find leaks all up and down the production chain?
Yeah, so in the UK, I was definitely surprised by what I saw. I did see large emissions events, which we've put online. You can see some of my tweets in the last month or so. And on our website, you'll find a lot of the videos and photos from the UK. I was onshore, even though a lot of the production is offshore, but it's really difficult to get offshore with one of these cameras. And so I was mostly in England, and I was looking at oil production and then gas transmission. It's important to know that a lot of methane comes from oil production, right? So fossil gas is often associated with oil in the underground reservoirs. And when companies are pumping oil up to the ground, then the gas is something that they have to deal with. It's an associated product. Their main focus is on the oil, but they have this associated gas they have to do something with. And they can sell it to market, or they can burn it, where you see a lot of flaring happen, or they can try to pump it back underground. Now, for a long time, gas was just vented into the atmosphere before people really knew methane was bad for global warming. And so what you have in the UK is that there were a lot of onshore oil production sites that I visited where the companies are actually permitted to vent gas into the atmosphere. And venting is one of the worst things you can do. We would rather see the gas being burned with a flare because it converts it into CO2. But instead, they were just permitted to vent it into the atmosphere.
Let's move on to Germany. Germany is famously a culture of precision, of rules, of regulations, and a nation that prides itself on being orderly, let us say. And fossil gas here is poised to go ahead and take a much bigger role in electrical generation as coal comes offline by 2030. Did Germany live up to its type? Were its gas fields and the areas that you visited, were they clean? And when you found methane leakage, is there a clear system in place for who is responsible for who to alert?
So we're working in Germany with a German partner, Deutsche Umwelthilfe, and they've been handling a lot of the communications with regulators and other authorities. But what I would say about what we've found in Germany is that there is a lot of emissions in the transmission system. So I've been going to what are known as compressor stations. These are essentially gas pumping stations that are found every 70 to 100 kilometers along a pipeline to repressurize the gas. As gas moves through the pipeline, it slows down and depressurizes. And so these compressor stations help pump the gas through the pipelines. And I've been to a lot of these in Germany and have found a lot of emissions at them. Been finding various different sources of emissions at each of these sites. These are very large sites. They have usually 3 or 4 sometimes large jet turbines that burn gas to then run the system and then compress the gas going through the pipeline. And so because so much gas is going through these large buildings, there tends to be a lot of leakage. We've reported, or at least our partner, Deutsche Umwelthilfe, has reported these leaks to authorities, and they've gotten different feedback and responses from them. In general, there's not, you know, there aren't many regulations on emissions for methane. Most of the regulations on methane leakages in Germany, as well as in other countries in Europe, revolve around safety and don't take into consideration the environmental factor, because methane, after all, is a combustible gas and can explode. So most of the leakages and the regulations about leakages go back a number of years and have been focused on the safety issue.
So the regulators, when you talk to them about this, when you approach them with these problems, and certainly the producers too, they came back with this as a safety issue, but not as something that they were A, losing money in, or B, something that was an environmental concern. Do you see any movement to adopt regulations around methane leakage?
I see that people are starting to pay more attention to methane emissions now. You know, since we first started showing videos of emissions from Germany and across Europe, there's been a lot greater response, both from companies and authorities on handling these emissions. We don't typically try to call out individual companies necessarily when we publish our results and our findings. However, we do specifically identify what sites we were at and where we were. And so the company name is on there. And I think the companies, when they see this, they get a bit concerned too, that their name is on these videos that they're seeing emissions. And so the companies are trying to react pretty quickly to some extent. But the problem is that we can't rely on good companies and bad companies to decide they want to act. You know, some companies might act quickly because of the concerns about their public reputation, and then other companies might say they're going to act quickly and then they don't do anything, and then other companies might not say anything at all.
Now take us a bit north to the Netherlands, again, the EU's biggest fossil gas production area. And what response did you get from local authorities and gas producers when you told them about the leaks you were finding?
I was in Groningen, and where some of these wells where they were deactivating, they seemed to not be operating when I was there. That doesn't mean that there couldn't potentially be emissions from those sites or leakages. I didn't see any, particularly at the production wells in Groningen. Where I did see some emissions, though, were in depressurization stations and measuring stations. So these are parts of the gas infrastructure where gas is distributed into lower pressure pipelines that would then be maybe distributed in within an urban area. And so there are a lot of these sites around countries. And so they're very much smaller sites. But I was seeing lots of small emissions events at these sites. And when you think about the number of them that exist in a country, that could certainly be a big cause of concern.
So what have oil and gas producers, as well as regulators and politicians, said when you've told them about the levels of leakage you're documenting? And for that matter, are you getting any pushback from them too?
We haven't had too much pushback in the Netherlands, or to be honest, anywhere else from anyone about my findings. I think even the oil and gas companies, for the most part, have acknowledged that what I'm filming is methane emissions at their facilities, and that this is a problem and they are working on it. And the same with authorities. They haven't pushed back at all as well from what we've been showing them. I think particularly at the higher policy level, not necessarily the regulatory level, the policymakers have expressed a lot of concern about what we've been showing them.
Like you, I was also in Romania in 2021, and since then we've given a lot of coverage to their coal exit and energy transition, which relies heavily on fossil gas. But Romania, which is famously chaotic and often, let us say, politically unstable, with a new government coming in more or less every year, as a result, there's a lot of under-regulation across the industry. But Romania is also planning not only to increase its gas production, but to increase its reliance on gas, both for electricity and also for home usage. What did you see there then, and how would you say this experience, your experience there, was different from the rest of Europe?
Romania was very interesting because, as you've mentioned, it's one of the last remaining sort of onshore oil and gas productions in the EU that's really planning also as a country to increase its gas consumption too. So there's a lot of production areas in Romania, particularly in the southern part of the country. And so I spent 2 weeks traveling around and found that the infrastructure in Romania is just quite old. There hasn't been a lot of upgrades to the system for oil and gas production. And so I was out filming and photographing different sites and seeing large rusted out holes and big oil storage tanks and rusted out holes and pipelines and on valves. So there were leaks coming from almost every part of the production area. Wherever there was a pipeline, wherever there was a valve network, I needed to look because it was pretty likely I was going to see something. I saw some pretty interesting stuff in terms of emissions in Romania. And we had some really good feedback from the National Environmental Guard, who is the agency responsible for enforcing regulations in Romania. And they were pretty interested at the time in looking at the oil and gas industry and looking at methane emissions too. But unfortunately, there, as you noted, the change in government that happens frequently, there was a change in government this summer. And so unfortunately, our contacts within the government are no longer there. And then we have to rebuild those partnerships. But there's been a ton of excitement along from media in Romania about the methane story and about the oil and gas industry. I think we've seen over 70 different stories from about 10 different media outlets since we started publishing our reports from Romania, which is just really great to see that level of accountability from journalists within the country.
All across the nation, you see these yellow pipelines snaking throughout neighborhoods, taking gas into houses. And there are plans to extend these pipelines further, partially as a way to get folks outside of cities to stop using biomass or wood or coal to heat their homes. But do you think that because Romanians are literally confronted with these pipes everywhere, that this issue of methane leakage resonates with them so much?
I think it's possible. I do think it is kind of funny to see that. I know exactly what you're talking about, and anyone who's been to Romania sees that everywhere. If you were in any other city, for the most part, in Europe, I haven't seen that elsewhere, but all those pipes still exist underground, and you just don't see them. They're out of sight and out of mind. But in Romania, you do see the yellow pipes carrying gas across. They put them above ground, and you see them kind of throughout urban areas delivering gas into homes. And it's possible, I think, that that's what's driving the concern in Romania. People do and are aware of the gas consumption. And so then the media really wants to talk about it and really bring it home to people about how this is a problematic issue.
Looking back now across all the nations you visited and hunted for methane, what has surprised you the most about what you found?
I've just been so surprised by how leaky the system is. The oil and gas system across Europe, before we started doing this work with the camera, you know, what we would hear from people in Europe is that Europe doesn't have a problem. You know, we don't have an issue with methane. We don't need these regulations on methane. But I've been finding it in every country I've been going to, and there are big problems in those countries, and I'm seeing large leaks that are occurring that could be easily fixed, and they can be easily fixed with, you know, regular leak detection and repair programs where the companies are required to inspect their facilities every month with these cameras or with some other equipment where they can quickly do scans of the facilities. And that would significantly reduce methane emissions because right now some companies are doing it once a year, maybe. But the actual, you know, regulations across the different countries are vastly different. And that's why we need the EU policies. And that's why the regulations that are going to be discussed during the next year are going to be incredibly important. And they need to be put in place very quickly. All of this needs to happen quickly. Putting in place a leak detection and repair program where companies are required to go out and inspect their sites, and then regulators actually following up with those companies to ensure that they're doing it is going to be incredibly important. And that could reduce a lot of the emissions that I've been seeing over the last year.
What about the rest of the world? Have you or has Clean Air Task Force or your partners hunted methane anywhere else besides the United States and Europe?
We do a lot of work around the world already. I've been working in South America and West Africa for 3 to 5 years now. And I think our approach in different places is going to be different, right? In some cases, we may, take this approach where we do try to expose what's going on. In other places, we might find that the best way of reducing emissions is by working directly with government on this, showing government policymakers what's happening. Because, sometimes the easiest way to show people what the problem is actually by taking them out into the field and showing them, right? So bringing government officials out and actually just showing them how bad the problem is and what it looks like, and that methane is an invisible gas. And you could be standing right next to a facility that is dumping a lot of methane into the air and you wouldn't know it unless you had a camera or some other instrument that was measuring the gas coming out of that facility.
And you're finding leaks everywhere, right? While I'm preparing for our interview, I read about an incident which seems emblematic of what is happening in much of Europe and the world, literally under our noses. Am I right that while you were in Romania, you filmed a big and seemingly continuous leak coming from the middle of an urban playground? Could you talk a bit more about what you discovered there?
No, that was in Romania. Yeah, that was a pretty sad, unfortunate scene. So I was traveling with someone who grew up in the area, and he, we had been out all day, and he was like, "Oh, well, I know this parking lot, this apartment building in this town where I grew up that has two wells. Maybe we could go look at that." And so we drove to the site, and there were two wells in this parking lot of an apartment complex. And the wells were about 25 meters apart from each other. And in between the facility, or the wells, not the facility, was a children's playground. And when we were there, it was probably 5 or 6 in the afternoon, and the playground was full of kids and parents. The kids were between the age of, say, 4 and 12, playing on the swings and the merry-go-round. And when we got out of the car to go look at the wells, we could smell the fumes coming from the wells. And so I knew right then that I was going to see gas coming out of them. And sure enough, when we turned the camera on and pointed it at the well, there was methane and other volatile organic compounds, potentially hazardous and toxic gases that were coming out of the wells. And pretty much wherever the wind was blowing, this playground was going to be inundated with these fumes and these gases. So it was a pretty kind of sad experience to see this. And I imagine those wells are still like that, but I haven't been back to the facility since June when I was there.
Based on your experiences, do you suggest activists and campaigners start pooling resources and buy themselves FLIR cameras and begin training on how to detect methane themselves? Do you think that we need, citizens' brigades to monitor industry and report them to the appropriate regulators? Do we need an army of methane vigilantes like you? And if that's the case, how do I sign up for the training and how can our listeners get involved?
Of course, I think it would be great. These cameras can be expensive, certainly for environmental groups and activists to do it. And then kind of traveling around and going to different areas takes a lot of time as well. I mean, it's taken me the whole year to do it. But I mean, the more people we have out there documenting this, the better. At the same time, if you're living near an oil and gas well and you're smelling something, then it's most likely because there's emissions coming out of that well. Or if you're living near a processing facility, there's a storage facility, and you're smelling something, there's probably emissions coming out of there. So you should try to get in touch with the local regulator or environmental authority and file complaints with them to let them know that this is happening and that there's a problem. You have Earthworks doing this in the United States. We're doing this in Europe. I think there's going to be more people that are going to be doing this as well, you know, over the coming years as more and more attention gets drawn to methane emissions. So hopefully there will be more people out there doing this and kind of shining light on this industry.
Thanks, James, for doing exactly that and for coming on our pod.
Of course. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. This was great.
Listeners, the methane story is, as James discussed, a global problem. And since Europe is mainly an importer of oil and gas, the volumes of fugitive methane that he found there are minuscule in comparison to where that oil and gas is being produced. While there's been a lot of media attention on Russia and methane leakage from pipelines in the Yamal Peninsula, where the new Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia to Germany originates, I fear these numbers are less than what's happening across the planet in Joe Biden's America, particularly in Texas. Now, they say everything is bigger in Texas, and when we talk about methane, this seems to be true. As James mentioned, another NGO, Earthworks, has long been documenting methane leakage in the U.S., and no one has been at it longer than Texas Sharon Wilson, who has posted hundreds, perhaps thousands, of videos of methane leakage in the United States, most recently in Texas's Permian Basin, the largest oil and gas field in the U.S. Now, our interview with her ran quite long, and rather than cut it too much, we'll give her a full show in the next podcast. But when I asked her how things have changed under new President Biden, she became so animated. We just have to go ahead and hear a little bit from her today.
I just got back from a 10-day trip to the Permian. I thought maybe things would be better because, you know, the EPA methane rules, because of the Biden president. He's supposed to be the climate president. It is magnitudes worse out there this time. It was so bad. It is hard to believe that in the face of rapidly accelerating climate change, where there's fires all over the U.S. and there's horrible hurricanes and tornadoes and floods and all over the world, these horrible weather events are happening. And still, we are doing the exact same that is causing it to happen. Methane is just blasting out everywhere. And I can't even comprehend how this could be happening.
We have listeners around the world, but many are in Europe. Why should what is happening in Texas's Permian Basin be of specific interest to them?
There are several reasons Europeans should be keenly interested. Some of the gas you are using in your homes comes from the Permian Basin, and it is the dirtiest gas. It has a horrible carbon footprint. In fact, it is so bad that France refused a several billion dollar LNG contract. They refused it because the gas from the Permian Basin is so dirty. Another reason Europeans should be concerned is because your banks and your insurance companies are financing fracking in the Permian Basin. And the third reason that you should be concerned is the Permian Basin is in Texas and New Mexico, and Texas has refused to regulate methane. And it's just basically lawless here. The industry can do whatever they want in most cases without consequence, without fear of consequence. And the Permian Basin is known as a climate bomb. Right now, they are producing about 5 million barrels a day, and they intend on doubling that by 2030.
You, Earthworks, Oil Change International, and the Center for International Environmental Law just collaborated on a fantastic 6-part report revealing, as you write, the true costs of the Permian Basin's explosive growth. Entitled The Permian Carbon Bomb, it's full of graphics, videos, and all sorts of great info. We'll link it into the show notes. But now that you are just coming back from the Permian, what are your reactions to Biden's new methane pledge?
How do you reduce something 30% when you don't even know how much is out there? No one even knows how much methane is being emitted by the oil and gas industry. So how can they know when they've reached 30% reduction? It's just, these are words on paper. It's not a plan.
Just words on paper indeed. We'll hear more from Texas Sharon in the next episode, but we'll have to leave it here for now. Once again, I am your host, Michael Buxbaum, and you have been listening to the Global Energy Transition Podcast, a new series presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. You can follow us on Facebook at global.energy.transition and on Twitter at Energiewende GER. You can find me at L. Michael Buxbaum. Thanks again to our guests, the methane hunting campaigner at Clean Air Task Force, James Torito, and the invincible OG methane hunter, Texas Sharon Wilson at Earthworks. Please look for links to their websites and reporting, as well as the newly published Permian Climate Bomb, in our show notes. Thanks also to the Energy Transition team in the EU office in Brussels, Lisa Tostado, Martin Keim, and Joan Lanfranco. Thanks for your edits and support too, Dr. Seuss. And thanks again to the podcast's amazing producer, the sound guru, Papa Papaya, and dude working far too many studio shifts, Christian Kreienborg. From high up in Hermigua, I wish you all smooth sailing on what may be rough seas ahead. Until next time.